podcast. KellerKellerOfficial.com.
You need the Kellervision app. 24/7 mini documentaries, podcasts, live shows, DJ live streams, top fives, subscription packages, plus products for all your podcasts and street culture sports. Download it from the App Store for free today.
Instagram UK Frontline.
Beatbox created.
Killer Keller.
And we're here to talk about world music and street culture.
Killer Keller Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, Killer Keller Podcast live and direct. We ain't in central London, we're in fucking Sheffield. Big up yourselves, hold tight Sheffield group. Big up graffitikings.co.uk all the time. If you can check the Kellervision app, you can get it free. Download iPhone, Android for your street culture needs. We have a legend in the house. Yo, they're just flying through like, you know. The answers is blowing in the wind of the former podcasting, the OG. That's inside the place. What are you saying, my brother?
Yes, how you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right. All good. A little bit tired, but I'm good.
Yeah? You've been busy at the moment? You've been out and about?
Yeah, I've just been doing a paint job, actually. But I'm here now.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm here now. So.
Could you ever imagine, like, I mean, you know, we go into retrospects and such, but did you ever think in the early years of Des, you ever thought for a second, you'd be at this place now, this juncture in your career, you know, and painting jobs and being busy. And, you know, I was very privy to the mini doc last week where, you know, boys were out. Do you know what I mean? It's, you know.
Well, to be fair, no. I mean, I've always been doing little jobs here and there when I was starting off. Mm. But now things just seem to, like, pick up and people just want stuff off me now all the time, so. That's the way things are going at the moment.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you think there's an ebbs and flows to it? Like, you're on top due to certain circumstantial things, you know, the lockdown or maybe people's interest in graph. Do these things come into play?
I think it might be a bit of both, to be fair. Yeah. It's definitely a bit of both. Because, I mean, the start of lockdown, that's when things really start to pick up. People wanting to do canvases, jobs, everything really.
Yeah, yeah, it's just the whole game suddenly switches. People have got a bit more passive income that they want
to. Yeah, that's it. Because nobody's been able to go nowhere. They've got to spend the money on something. So they'd rather spend it on me.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not complaining.
In the short, I mean, knowing your work for a long time, only has it come to light how fucking chilled you are as a person. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're fucking so passive and chilled.
Well, everyone's always said I'm chilled and laid back. I'm not laid back. I'm nearly laying down. Well, I'm chilled. Look how
you're chilling now.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I've chilled out a lot in from like when I was younger.
Because was it different? Was there a different mentality back then?
Yeah, because when I was like younger, we all followed that New York trend, you know what I mean? Everyone were just out for themselves, really. I mean, I wasn't working. I had to get paint somehow, either from shops or off other writers.
And that was the order of the day?
Yeah.
By default, you subscribed to that?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, we just wanted to be like as street as possible, really. I mean, that's what graffiti writers were like in New York, and that's how we acted, really. And we just thought it was, well, the Bible.
It sounds crass, but when someone said to me the hip-hop culture was a cheap-to-enter culture in the sense that if you were good at poetry and writing, you could be an MC. If you were good at art and you had the you could facilitate having the paint, you could be a graffiti writer. How much of that rang true of its time? Did it feel like everybody that were denied a skill or were denied the opportunity to show a skill, this became like the immediate go-to scene?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, back in the day, well, graffiti were frowned upon. You couldn't get places to paint or funding anywhere.
Yeah,
really. I mean, there was like a couple of outlets out there what might help you, but other than that, it was a struggle, definite struggle. Yeah, I mean,
no kind of help from a, was it a class thing, do you think? You know, the whole attitude of, you know, education and...
Yeah, because, I mean, like, because, like, graffiti was, because it was new back then. The term graffiti, everyone just saw it as a negative.
Yeah.
I mean, some, like, some people do still, I mean, the older generation. I mean, because being the younger generation, I mean, the older generation was, like, from probably 30 upwards when we were young, and everybody was, like, against graffiti. But, like, then everyone was into graffiti was, like, from our generation. And seeing graffiti around, everybody wanted to do it or be a part of it. And even if they weren't good at art, you know, they had a tag or went out bombing.
Yeah. Almost like in the theory to practice of tag, to throw up, to dub, to piece, it kind of had like a whole, it has a whole lineage that is generational, and the young people of its time were just straight tagging, but they were developing the tags the whole time. So the more people that were doing it, the more that was learned quicker.
Yeah.
That's bonkers, isn't it, when you think of it?
Yeah, well, it's a stepping stone. It's a stepping stone, like you start off with your tag, you perfect your tag, you get your hand style, then you go on to like throw-ups and then to piecing and stuff like that. But some people just go straight into doing pieces and stuff like that. They don't bother going street bombing or anything like that anymore.
That to me seems like a lack of foundation, like the idea of like bypassing a really important aspect,
yeah,
like tagging or, you know, even doing straight letters, you know, just real things that people think is so basic, but it's actually fucking really hard to do.
But they also miss out on the fun of doing that, going out and bombing. You know what I mean? Because there's that element of doing stuff like that what still appeal to me to this day, you know? I still want to go out bombing, you know, you get that buzz from it. So if the opportunity came along, I'd do it.
You would do it even now?
Yeah, I'll do it even now. Yeah, I still go out there and do stuff. I still do.
yeah, still busy. Talk to me about your, because obviously hip hop came through the influence and all the New York scene, you know, from Buffalo Girls to you know, Subway Art, you know, all these classic, you know, era defining moments. How did you get into, like, what was it that suddenly sparked your interest on such a level?
Well, hip-hop started me breakdancing and stuff like that, because I used to breakdance, like, I started off breakdancing.
Really?
Started off breakdancing. We had a crew.
What was the crew called? Here we go.
Nuclear Force.
Nuclear Force.
Yeah, and then we changed it to, well, that was the first name, Nuclear Force, and then we changed it to, oh, gosh, let me think about what the... Oh, God, I can't remember right now. It's such a long time ago.
Yeah. We're going into the recesses, the deepest recesses. But this is great, because, you know, I think with a podcast like this, it's really important to create. And, you know, I'm sure you've done things like this in the past, but I think for a lot of people, what we saw in Sheffield in the, like, mid-90s, there's no smoke without fire. Do you know what I mean? And you were part of the original story of why Sheffield became like the top of its game at a time, right?
Well, the thing about it was, I mean, when I first started doing graph, there was just a handful of writers in Sheffield. There was, I used to go out with this guy called Jazz 2. He would like me writing. Man, we used to go out bombing, and then when we ran out bombing, we used to see little tags by Marlo, Chiefree, Kato. And then we didn't know who they were. We just thought, right, we'll just put drips on their tags. We used to draw drips on the tags. We really wound them up. And then we found out that these guys were, like, older than us.
Oh, shit.
We were, like, 15, 16. And these guys were like, well, they're only a few years older than us. They would have been about 18, 19.
Mm.
But they were still older than us. And plus there was a breakdance crew called Smack 19. They had graffiti artists in there.
Nice.
Sulfie and Bernie. They got together with a guy called Foster and Easel, and they did a piece. So
I bet there's some heads out there right now that are just like, yes, yes, that's right. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
These moments don't go away in people's minds easily.
Yeah, yeah, and they went under the name of King Four.
King Four.
Yeah. So after going out bombing, and we eventually met up, eventually met Kato and G3 and that.
Yeah.
So we made a crew just to. He never went in it because he wasn't really like piecing. So me, Marlo, Kato and G3, we made a crew called the Elite Artists.
Mm.
Mm, so
wow. So that was that the first inception of like crew?
Yeah.
Graph. Wow. Mm.
So there was
a what year was that? What year was that?
This was 85.
Wow.
I started in 83. So yeah, 85 was, but me and Jazz 2, there were a few others, but we were just a crew, really. What went out painting, we were called Aerosol Artists, and there must have been about 10 of us in it.
Yeah.
But not all of them painted like we did.
Yeah.
But, Elite Artists came along, and then we found an outlet in the Sheffield Polytechnic. They had a students' union what was interested in what we was doing.
Polytechnic?
Yeah.
Why?
Mm. So they started setting things up for us. They said, oh, do you want to, we asked them if we could, sort of, do an exhibition.
Mm-hmm.
So they funded that.
Wow.
Yeah. So
proper.
This is when, Buntlack was just coming in.
Buntlack was a thing. A real thing.
And, And we did a piece, it's all in Buntlack. We did this piece, it's all in Buntlack, really. And we did an exhibition. And then after the exhibition, we decided to run a competition, a graffiti competition, to see what crews, out there,
yeah,
want to showcase what they want to do and everything. And we did a competition. So we had it down at the Nelson Mandela building, which was a big hall, where we could put events on.
Nice.
And we ran a competition, and crews from all over Sheffield came and painted. Because, at the time, we were, bombing, and we started to see loads of different tags popping up here and there and all over, and on buses and on walls everywhere. So when we had this competition, it sort of brought everybody together. So people could put names to tags.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So and that's how I formed our crew, ACT, which was back then known as All City Taggers, before it's known now as Awesome Crime Team.
Wow.
Because when everybody went All City, this was the next step to be called Awesome Crime Team.
And just building outwards, it just sounds so organic, but I'm sure it was, you were saying about meeting writers and their names for the first time, that must have just, that moment alone must have been, career-defining.
Mm.
What?
Yeah, because, the only form of transport in Sheffield was the bus routes, and we used to see tags on buses.
Yeah.
It was a very complex system, the bus system, because you had we had yards where they port certain types of buses what ran on certain routes. So my particular bus route, it ran on Mazer's bus route, and it ran on Spread's bus route. And they're the tags of what I used to see, and then I was like, why are these guys tagging on my buses?
These are my motherfucker.
This is my bus line. So, you had my bus route, and then you had Miss One's bus route, which port in, I think it was Harry's Yards. Like,
okay.
So, like, his buses ran on certain other routes. They never ran on my route, so I never saw his, unless I went on one of his buses.
Mm.
So, but you get other bus routes what run in other different places. So, in order to, like, get on their buses, we had to, like, catch him. But catching buses in Sheffield, it only cost 2 pence to get on a bus.
Yeah, you're right, yeah.
Adult fare were 5p, so...
Easy.
We used to just catch buses all day.
Yeah, and just to get busy.
Yeah.
What's the deal with, just out of curiosity, the tram thing here? I mean, obviously I knew Sheffield had trams, but they never really got hit, did they? Trams weren't really a thing.
Well, no, because, with the tram systems is, if it gets hit, it gets parked up where it is and they'll come out and buff it.
Straight away?
Yeah.
Oh, that's pointless, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's hard to get in the... although it's been done, people have been... Well, European writers have been in there and painted them, but they don't run them.
Yeah, it just doesn't serve of any purpose, does it?
No. So it's...
So not even back in the day, there wasn't really a...
Well, the thing about it was... Oh, I can go on and on.
So that's your podcast. There we go. let the games begin.
Well, we won't even talk about the student games when it came to Sheffield, because that more or less nearly wiped out graffiti in Sheffield.
Really?
Yeah.
What happened?
Well, the student games came to Sheffield and there was some mad clean-up.
Yeah.
Well, they probably did the same in Manchester when they had the student games in Manchester.
And the Olympics went in 2011, 2012. Yeah.
Did that happen in London?
Yeah, in London, yeah.
Yeah, so
they... They were locking people up. It was nuts, yeah.
Yeah.
So, to my understanding, of course.
Yeah, they can't have, a big event like that coming to Sheffield and seeing Sheffield how it was, because we got labelled as the worst bomb city in Europe.
Really?
At one stage, yeah. Because you couldn't go anywhere in Sheffield and not see graff. It doesn't matter if you went to a rich area or a poor area.
Yeah.
It was bombed the same way.
What? I can't even imagine that to that extent, where you're the worst city for bombing in the world, in Europe.
Mm. Because, everybody were bombing back then. Even the milkman were bombing, they were tagging up. Everybody were. But there was, because there were so many writers.
Just a thing, yeah.
Yeah, there were so many writers. I mean, people talk about... I've talked to writers about writers now, and they're like, I never heard that name before. It's impossible to know everybody.
Mm-hmm.
We were tagging back in the 80s. So, as soon as you stepped off the train and went through the bus station, it was just, annihilated everywhere. Whoa.
Done.
Mm. Everyone was fighting for space, really.
Mm. What did the council think of that time? You know, I mean, obviously, they frowned upon it, but it was out of control.
Yeah, it was out of control, but... They couldn't do anything. I mean, back in the day, there weren't no CCTV or anything. There weren't more mobile phones.
Mm.
If somebody saw you tagging, they'll have to run to a telephone box. And by the time they've done that, you've gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like...
Probably tagged the telephone box as well, see?
Yeah. So, we used to just bomb everything, really.
Does that mentality stay with you? And because things... Environments change. Second, like you say, cameras suddenly come into play.
Mm.
All these different techniques and ways in which they can, track certain things as time has developed. But the mentality of a writer is same shit, different day.
Yeah.
At what point do you really start feeling the tightening of the noose as far as, well, we've got to be a bit more careful? Because there's one minute it's fucking loads and loads and loads of writers, and next minute... You start separating the men from the boys, don't you? And then you see the noose tightening on certain...
I think... it was an era when Fister was just coming around. I sort of, dropped back because things were just getting a little bit... I thought things were getting a little bit...
Top.
On top then.
Mm.
But Fister came along and... sort of drawed the heat away from me a little bit.
Really? really. Did you? But up till that point, you would, because I mean, I've seen photos of you, and you know, you internationally, like you've been about, like, to just suddenly jump to Fister. I'm like, hold on a minute, wait a minute, breaks a minute.
Yeah, let's just rewind it. Yeah, yeah. Before Fister.
So you were active. You were doing your thing, and you were going across countries, international, schmoozing with.
Yeah,
the...
went to New York.
Yeah.
In fact, I still go to New York now. I first went to New York in '84, as I was getting into hip hop.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was into breakdancing and hip hop, into graph, but not as much into graph. I was more or less into like hip hop at the time.
Yeah.
So I've been over to New York, and I stopped in Brooklyn, New York, and I'd seen the trains, like caught the subways a few times, and noticed all the graph on them, and I'm like, what's all this? Because I've never seen graph on trains.
Mm.
I've seen it on walls, because through like videos like Malcolm McLaren and certain like other videos, but like they're just painting on walls, not on trains.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So like when I come back from New York, that's when I really got into graph, and that's when I started like seeing more. You see like breakdance videos, and you see graffiti in the background. And I'm like, I want to do that, you know. You know, you copy stuff, and then you that's how you get into it.
Mm.
And then I went back to New York in 1986. And because I'd already been out there already, I went with my parents and my brother and my cousin and my mum and dad. I went to my sister's wedding, because my sister lives over there.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I keep going over to New York.
Okay.
And I've got a family friend what lives over there in the Bronx as well. At the time, and I used to stop with him a lot.
Yeah, well, that's a route to passage and a half, you know, like, you lucked out. Like, I was like, ow.
So going back to New York in 86, when I'm really into graph.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hi, New York, I'm here, give me your graph.
So I know about the trains and everything like that, so I'm like, my sister lives in Long Island where there's no, like, trains.
Yeah.
So, but my friend, he lives in the Bronx, and my sister got married, and my mum says, right, they stopped over there 2 weeks, and my mum says, do you want to stop over a bit longer? I says, well, how long can I stop? She goes, well, you can stop 6 months. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, I'm stopping then. So
make my bed, thank you.
So I stopped 6 months. So
that must have been insane. 6 months of just study, basically.
Yeah. So, like, my sister lives in Long Island, so I said to my sister, she was right, I'm going to visit my friend in the Bronx. So I got a subway map out, had a look how to get there. She never took me.
Yeah.
I just got on the Long Island Railroad into Manhattan.
And
caught the 2 train up to the Bronx.
Casual.
Yeah.
A bit too casual.
Yeah, I know, a bit too casual, but, you know, I fit in.
Yeah.
I caught you up to the Bronx, like, and went up to his house. I thought, right, he was at school. I thought, right, I'm just going to go down to East 180th and wait on the platform and take some pictures of some trains. 2s and 5s coming along all day.
Right, talk to me. What was it like when I mean, obviously, you'd seen a lot of trains, but to be in that environment, the first time you see a train pull up with your own eyes, what was that feeling like?
Well, I had my camera with me, and you literally shake. You literally shake thinking, what's going to be on this train here? What's going to be on it? And you just watch it pulling in, and you just think to yourself, I've just got to get a good shot of this train.
Bro, that would have just... Yeah, yeah. An abundance of names. It could be any given person on any day that painted some. The mind bog just standing there waiting for. That's fucking amazing.
Yeah, I know. I took loads of pictures. I mean, the most upright at the time were D-Row, COD, Children of Death, Nine Wayne. Wayne writes No as well. And Hymns.
Hymns.
Yeah. them guys were up, DC3, Duster was still painting trains, Cope 2.
Got some Cope as well.
Yeah, so, well, some, like, his early, like, stuff, because, like, this was, like, in 84, 86, this is, like, some, like, early stuff for his as well. So, I mean, there was some sane trains I took.
What was the Duster, what was the Duster piece like?
It was him and... I think it was him and Scene. I think it might have been a psycho.
Well, hold on, this rolled in. Oh,
I think it might have been a psycho what he did.
God, you make him eyes water. That's fucking bonkers.
Yeah, yeah, I got a Mad Scene one as well. The Duster psycho one, that was done in like pinks and yellows with a couple of characters in between.
Fuck's sake. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Okay. Yeah. So this was 6 months of just.
Yeah.
Back to back research.
Yeah. But I ended up meeting Dero and Nine and Wayne.
No way.
I was just on a platform one time and they came along.
And, what were they like? What were these characters like on? Because obviously.
Well, they were young.
You've got the accent, you've got an accent though, and you're going out and it's like, what are you doing here?
the mind blew in a way to like. Why is a writer from England in the Bronx?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. How? Yeah, on his own. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, but they took me places where to paint. There were a place where they took me underneath the... I think it was underneath the... I think it was a flyover or somewhere.
238.
Yeah. 238.
238.
Yeah, it's like you had to go down this banking over like... X amount of train lines to get to these walls underneath the flyover and paint it down there. That's where I did my first piece in New York. I was right inside at the time, SYDE, and I did a silver with red outline and bits of black filling in on it.
Nice. Side, yeah?
That was my name, what I took over to New York at the time, and then I come back as Such Destruction.
Really?
Yeah, Death for short. Because that's what that's what I was going to be causing when I got back.
Yeah, yeah. Because you'd just built up all of this intel, experience, connection. That's just been like night and day, man.
But it doesn't end there because meanwhile I was over there, I went to Scene Shop. That was
the tattoo shop as well, because there's two, right?
This was before he had his tattoo shop. This is when he had his when he was doing his t-shirts and stuff like that. Airbrush.
What was it like in there? Walking into there, what was the environment like?
Well, like, you know, something, I had to walk through half of the Bronx to get there. Because
it became like a US embassy by the time you got there.
It's a distance from the train station, and. When I went there, it was like a small sort of like shop, and I got missed a t-shirt done. I don't know why, but I never got myself done. I didn't get myself one done.
So Miss got all the lot, see what I'm saying? Charming.
Yeah, he asked me to get him a t-shirt and I got him a t-shirt done, so...
But hold on, you were in the manor, you were in the... Yeah. The Scene Mecca. And what else was he selling in there? Was he selling others, like paint and stuff?
No, he was just doing T-shirts.
That's mad.
Just doing airbrush T-shirts at the time. I mean, because that's how he started his business, really.
Doing
T-shirts. And then he got into tattoos and now he is where he is now. But,
I think he's got potential. He's doing all right. Yeah, isn't he? He seems to be doing all right.
Yeah, doing all right. And, but I love New York.
Would you have stayed?
I would have stayed, but I wanted to come back because you just want to tell everybody or show everybody all this cool stuff what you've got and all these photos what you've got and everything like that, because like people always ask, why don't you stop over there? And I'm like, it weren't an agent for me to stop over there.
Yeah, because you would have changed your whole personality. Is that what you mean? From an age point of view, you were too impressionable.
I think it was because getting into graff at the time, I mean, really into graff, and you want to get back and basically show everybody what's happening over there.
Yeah.
Because not everybody knows what's happening. I mean, they've seen Style Wars and Subway Art, but it's not like how you want to tell it, you know what I mean? You just want to say, oh, I've met this person, I've met that person, I've met C, you know.
Mm. Your own interpretation, basically, yeah. isn't it? Rather than what people are seeing in the media.
Mm. Yeah, so... But I've been back loads of times since then. Met up with Cena again. He were doing comics at the time, this time. I don't know if you heard about them comics, the Phony Baloney comics.
We shall do some research.
Yeah, do research on Phony Baloney comics.
Wow.
Yeah, he were doing comics, yeah. In fact, I've got one. He gave me one of the first editions.
Scene transcends into Americana. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You a comic, a T-shirt, canvases.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that he was never really into hip-hop in that sense. But there's something about his style which it goes down in, like, you know what I mean? You could see it in an episode, you know, the film Grease.
Yeah.
It's that kind of iconicness, mm-hmm. isn't it?
Mm. In fact, you can see his sort of like style. If you ever get to read one or look at one and see the characters in it, if you open it up and looked at it, you'll think, Scene's done these. It's just got that style to it of all the characters. Because the one I've got, it's rats against pigs. Rats are the criminals, pigs are the cops, in it.
Yeah. Connotations.
That's what the characters are about in it. So, but you can see the style, Scene's style in them.
Wow. Mm. Need to cut me one. I mean, I bet they're rarity. I mean, you went in at a time where these things were just they were there already, ready available.
Mm-hmm.
Looking back on it now, you've got some like legacy pieces there that have just. They'll stand the test of time.
Yeah, yeah. New York is just... I met loads of writers. I'm loads of friends with writers over there. I mean, like there's like the Tats crew.
Mm. I'll type bio. Good man.
Yeah. How I got in with the Tats crew because we used to have this like festival in Sheffield called Freedom Festival.
Yeah, I've heard of it, yeah.
And we got them to come over. BG and Bio came over for that, and they painted, and I basically took them around. They came from my house for like Sunday dinner one time. So like every time I go back to New York, I always make a beeline for the Bronx and go and see them, being out with them.
They're fun.
Yeah,
they just seem to be like, they should have like a proper like. Mini, you know, like the Osbournes, but it should be the Tats crew. Do you know what I mean? It's totally, they're fun. Yeah. They seem like a lot of fun.
Yeah, so like when I went back to New York, they took me out and I went up to the Bronx and I met up with them. And so like I left with them and we drove to Manhattan and we sat in the back of the car and like they're smoking and like you get that passive smoking and like, I'm looking through the window and going down the freeway and you're just looking at Manhattan skyline at night time going past and I'm like just thinking, look at how big this place is.
Yeah.
They could drop me off here and I wouldn't know where the hell I was.
Mm.
So yeah, them guys are fun, like we went to titty bars and all sorts.
Really, yeah. I see what I'm saying. The podcast, the real stories come out, right? Let me circle back around that skyscraper moment. Because to a young person, any city, whether it's New York or Sheffield, and I was actually speaking to the whole type Danny Cans, because we were talking about this earlier on, it's like the magnitude of certain cities, and when you're young and you've got such a desire to conquer it, sometimes it can be so overwhelming, can't it?
Yeah.
But it's best foot forward, isn't it? It's okay, I'm going to tackle this, and piece by piece, brick by brick, build the house, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And you just wonder to yourself, like, how some writers can get all City in New York and how vast it is as well. Because getting all City in New York must take years.
Yeah. Coming back from there with the newfound intel and applying it alongside... I mean, you're creating foundations for Sheffield, bro. Like, you literally... if it weren't for, like, some of you, Mist, and a handful of others, you know... Fister wouldn't have... There wouldn't have been a full cycle of understanding and like, principles, I feel. I mean, and I'm not from Sheffield. This is just from conversations I've had and a basic understanding of the scene. You were one of the forefathers, and that intel, I think, has helped the reverberation of more writers even today.
Yeah, well...
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like I said, like it just kick-started Sheffield... when I came back, because everyone just seemed to go like mental, and we were just like out painting all the time, and writers were coming from out of town, you know, to paint. I mean, like we had places to paint, but it were places what are going to get knocked down, so we're allowed to do it. We used to like go there every Sunday and paint piece. Some writers. Well, toy writers might have been a little bit reluctant to, like, not go down there when we were down there, but that's life sometimes. And
yeah. Were you notorious in that respect? Was there a level of fear from the toys? Like,
yeah, I think, well, nobody... I don't think nobody liked the act back then. Nobody liked the act back then, because everybody probably would have got taxed by us at one time. I mean, like... There's some writers now who are good friends still remind me about how I were back then.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
there's a writer called Cost. When I first...
Old type Cost.
Yeah, respect. Sorry about that. But I made him stand to attention for an hour, meanwhile I painted.
Oh, God. Oh,
after took his paint or searched his pockets, frisked him or whatever. Big up Seven.
Type Seven.
Yeah. No, I'm not going to give you back your head in 850.
Oh, my God. So this is a far cry from the gentleman I know I'm talking to here. This is revelationary in a way. I'm like, so you were really like on them like that?
Yeah. We were... I think we were pretty ruthless back then.
Really?
Yeah.
Tell me more. To what levels was it? I mean, you know, because I know, you know, I think we've all concluded that the entry holes of criminality lie within certain elements of graph. You know, it's the gateway to certain things, and you know, but how close to the wire did it go? Like, were you like formidable? Were you like a tour de force on the street? Was it like?
Yeah, nobody. Well, put it this way. I think toys back then, writers back then, if the souls come in, they'd had the paint or the pens or whatever.
Really, yeah.
Well, we'd give them a good frisking to see what they've got on them.
It's funny you say that, because Jewel from New York, he had a podcast with him, and he was like, you know, back in the day, nowadays, if you say I'm a writer, it's like, oh, yeah, what do you write? Back then, if you said, oh, I'm a writer, it's like, right, you're getting fucking taxed.
Yeah. That's how it was. That's how it was, because we didn't have any income. We had to get his paint from somewhere. Mm. We had to get his pens from somewhere. If it weren't from shops, it was from, like, other writers. That's how it were.
Sheffield, though... North of England, the impact that it must have had to some of the old school shopkeepers, you know. I hate to cite Open All Hours, but I could imagine there was a couple of shopkeepers like that, you know, that had no idea what was coming to them.
They didn't. I'll tell you a little story. In the elite artists, we got this legal job to do one time.
Yeah.
And us writers used to have like head bags to go out racking. We go to this car shop, Charlie Brown's, And we're walking. I says, right, we need to buy some paint. Mm. We want to spend X amount of paint. Mm. I mean, X amount of money to buy some paint. He's like, oh, yeah, a couple hundred pound. He's like, ching-ching, I can see the dollar signs.
Yeah.
So we're like, rack of paint. So, like, I said, all right, we'll have one of these, put one on the counter, one in my bag, one on the counter, one in my bag. Fill the head bag up.
Yeah, one for you, one for me.
And we used to go in there all the time and do that.
Because we're talking in retrospect now. This doesn't happen nowadays in any form of graffiti. Just so you know, we were talking in facts here from back in the day.
Yeah, we don't do that stuff anymore.
We don't do that stuff. No graffiti writer does that. Doesn't happen. Yeah, that's bonkers. I mean, you know, this frivolous behaviour of a time where not inhibitions. Karma wasn't a thing.
No.
Immortality. Youthful wisdom.
Yes. Yeah, we didn't care really much.
Yeah.
If we could get away with it.
Yeah. Talk to me about your painting technique. Because, you know, if you haven't checked the mini doc, the Sheffield Report, there's a style that goes on in Sheffield. And of course, you know, the buck stops right here. So talk to me about your style. Talk to me about how you operate. Talk to me about your paint.
Right. My style, I call it the transatlantic style.
Nice.
Because it's a blend of New York and old school English style from a bit of style from the London style from the Chrome Angels and stuff like that. But a bit of a blend because I used to be going backwards and forwards to New York all the time. Yeah. So that's why I call my style the transatlantic style, because it's a bit of both, but it's more. It's a bit of both. It's a blend because the letter technique is kind of like New York, but the filling in is more English.
Mm. Yeah, I get you.
Sort of style.
Definitely. When you say Chrome Angels and the fills, yeah, I feel you. Particularly with some of the older stuff. Do you feel like, and I ask you this, I could ask a lot of people from the era, but when I think of your stuff, and also being the fact that you're not from London, and there is a particular, because a lot of people were heavily influenced by New York, but then they're also heavily influenced by Europe, and there was definitely a moment in time where there was that transitional period. Mm-hmm. But do you ever feel like you're in a bit of an echo chamber, whereby the thing, for someone like Sheffield, where you were forging the original look, and now you're kind of going full cycle, and you're kind of, oh, here's me again. No, I'm just carrying on. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. But you know something, my style, I don't think I could ever perfect it, because there's always something I want to do to it, or...
Is that yours?
Oh, God, I don't want one of them.
You don't want it, but do you have it?
Yeah.
You have it. Yeah, so I guess it's just progressing it.
Yeah.
And if you've defined a style that... It's almost like if you label it transatlantic, then that gives you a clearer lineage of how you repeat that into your...
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like if you're rock and roll, you know, those basic principles of don't give a fuck, you know. Or if you're politically driven, hip-hop actually... Defining it as hip-hop actually helps the creative process, doesn't it?
Yeah, hip-hop graffiti, that's what I like.
Yeah.
Because that's basically the foundation of my graph, hip-hop graph.
I think it's really easy for people to take away that fact in an age where graffiti becomes politicised and is social commentary and stuff, and a lot of grime MCs will be rapping in front of it. A lot of drum and bass DJs were graffiti writers. A lot of people that love drum and bass also love... It's like, nah, man, like... Okay, the styles and everything changes, but the roots, they need to be cemented, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because, like... if I didn't have the background from where I come from and how I started and everything like that, my style wouldn't look how it is now. Yeah. And it's a natural style to me, still that. I mean, There's a lot of writers out there. What, you know, do the names and everything like that. But I find it natural to do any letter.
Mm-hmm.
I can write any letter, write anything, and make it look good. That's why a lot of people. That's why I've done like canvases for people and stuff like that. You know, like name canvases and stuff.
And that doesn't. That's. I mean, obviously, you've got your own definitive style within that. Like you say, you. It's almost like practicing any method in graphics. Like to be able to do the alphabet is like another huge landmark in anyone's style. But you don't mind putting someone else's name on a canvas and then not knowing entirely that it's you by default of a canvas. You know what I'm saying?
If somebody saw one, they'd be like, "Oh yeah, that's a such a desk canvas."
Yeah, that's fucking cool, isn't it?
It's just got that look to it. I mean, you can tell my style like from a mile away, really.
That's such a good. And going back to my first question in the whole chat, it must be mad to think that three plus more decades, how many decades? You're sitting here now and you can safely say, yeah, I'll just do that canvas and I just know. And they will know.
Mm-hmm.
The ones who need to know will know that that's my... That must be mad, isn't it?
Yeah. Shall we get to that? Yeah.
Let's get to it. Big up Danny Cairns. What's the question?
Right.
What was the question for the audience?
Yeah, I did a canvas for Toddler T.
Hold tight, Toddler T. Yeah, my guy.
Me brethren.
Yeah, that's right. Sheffield crew, stand up. Come on. Yeah.
Yeah.
He lives around the corner from me as well,
Does he?
Yeah, he's been on. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay.
That's my dog. Yeah. Oh, he's one of the, he's one of the most honest dudes out there. What you get in the, it's what it says on the tin. Yeah. So you done him a canvas,
He's got it up in his studio. In fact, I did him three canvases actually, for his boys, as well.
For his kids. Fucking sick, yo! That's gonna be a coffee talk and an half when I see him next. It's looking great, banging. See, and I think in an era of street art and the benefits and pluses and the negatives and such, there is this entry hole for ideas to be explored, particularly for the hardcore from back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a rude word. It's not a dirty word to say canvas in the same context as trains and street art.
No.
How do you feel about that? Controversial. Spice alert. Spice alert. Here he comes. Making
him
cough out here, huh?
I know it's when I think about it. I mean, like back in the day when you saw like I used to watch. I think it was Style Wars.
Yeah.
When there were writers on there doing canvases and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's right.
And I thought to myself back then, I was like, well, that's what they're doing stuff on canvases for, and. I think that's what you end up doing.
It just goes there, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it's a progression because growing up and, well, you've got to grow up. You've got no choice but to grow up and taking a risk is taking a risk.
Yeah.
You know, like when you start a family and everything like that. But
yeah.
That's when you have to like calm down and avenues like this seem to come into play at some point.
Yeah. And let's not at this point discredit any of the hardcore that are out there in Sheffield. Hold tight, all the soldiers out there. What do you want to see from the Sheffield scene? Like, what would be like a core message that you would like to send to a scene that you were a proprietor of, along with the aforementioned? What would you like to see from the scene in Sheffield?
I would like to see from the scene, writers, writers what want to explore more in the letters,
Right.
you know, put more effort into the letter style.
Yeah.
Because I think back in the 90s, early 90s, or mid 90s, when the rave scene came along, I think a generation got skipped. Because the main writers probably weren't painting at the time, and the new writers, what were coming out, sort of lost the way of Sheffield Graff. Because like Sheffield had their own style, back in the 80s, and I think that got lost. Mm. I think it got lost.
It happens. Yeah. The whole rave era kind of wiped a lot of people's attention away, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. It did. And that's what I'm sorry about, in a way, because, I mean, even I got sucked into that era, you know. A lot of writers got sucked into that era. In fact, a lot of writers did.
Yeah. Some never came back to write again, though.
Well, the thing was, I mean, over the last 5 years, a lot of old school writers have been coming back into Graff. Mm. Been coming back into Graff because I've been running these like Graff jams up in Sheffield over a decade now. Mm. I started doing them over a decade ago. First, I just started inviting.
These have been going good as well, haven't they?
I started inviting local writers. Then I started inviting writers from out of town, you know, like friends who I grew up with. Who I know, started inviting them down, you know, like writers from London to Newcastle come down.
That's right, you've had some premier writers come up as well.
Yeah. Had INSA down, got Newcastle writers down, Inch and them guys. From a few writers from all over, really. I can't go into names because the list is endless.
Exactly. Check the wiki, all right? and you know, Sheffield for me, I just hold a, you know, sweet spot in my heart, just for the writers that are out there now. Big shout out to yourselves, obviously, all day, you know, the soldiers that are out there right now killing it. There's too many to go into, all right, but you know who you are. Don't be commenting me and DM me, why didn't you get so on, because we'll be back. But that late 90s era where, you know, the graffiti wars, that, you know, that, I mean, I go online on YouTube and I've never seen, like, I don't know a town that has so many documentaries on it than Sheffield, boy.
There was the whole
Fister era, this whole thing.
You got the Mist Easel era. the graffiti wars back then. TDK.
I mean, they were fucking beacons of, like, radar noise, just, you know, radiating across the UK. Like, I just, you know, it was around the Kings and Toys era as well. It just felt like all of a sudden media had, like, picked up on something, you know?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's always going to be graffiti wars in Sheffield with so many writers.
Yeah.
You know, there's always going to be wars, and there's wars going on now, right now. Always wars going on.
Is that a natural reaction of the scene in Sheffield? Has it always been the case that there's the internal kind of beefs and fights in the scene? Is that just the nature of it?
It's a nature, but I mean, some people go over writers and things just spark off and there's a spiral out of control and that's the be all and end all of it, really. That's how wars start, and they get really, really bad sometimes.
The romantic in me also feels like that shows that there's heart and passion and there's a lot going on, you know what I mean? There's a lot of good reason to keep your eye on Sheffield. Do you know what I mean? Like, from the outside looking in. It's a crazy time. And I wish the scene best, man. I really, really appreciate you passing through, man.
Oh, we're not done already, are we? I've not even talked about Tag the System when I went there and met up with...
Let's get into it. Talk to me. Talk to me.
All right, OK. So, like, I went to New York. I can't remember what year it was. It was when there was an exhibition in Manhattan. I met up with the tax crew and they took me down to it. It was called Tag the System. And there were writers... who'd done trains, and they did these little plastic trains about a foot long.
Mm.
And each writer got one of these trains to paint, and they had them on display.
In cabinets? Kind
of. Yeah, and there were hundreds of them. Some of them made oozes out of them. Some of them painted them white and put fairy lights in front of them, you know, like on Bridge Street, you get the white train. Like, and but some of them had done whole cars...
What?
With the names on, you know.
So they had these as canvases and they could do whatever they want?
Yeah. They were each given one and then they had them on display.
Did you do one?
No, because it was an exhibition, it was a gallery. But I've got one of them trains.
I've never heard of this event at all.
Yeah, it's called Tag the System. I've got one of these trains. Bio gave me one. It's only half of a train, but I've got one. I've not even painted it yet and he gave it me about... 7 years ago, and I've still not got around to painting it.
Can I ask you, like,
I will do it one day.
Yeah, I think it's yeah, exactly. And is your? It begs me to ask, like, what's you must have so much memorabilia in your yard. There must be just so much stuff.
Yeah, I've got loads. I've got like scenes, calling cards when he had his shop. In the Bronx, when he was doing his airbrush T-shirts, because that's what's advertised on them, he had these little calling cards. Like, some of them were white, some of them were fluorescent orange. And it had, like, a B-boy character on, stood up with a spray can. He had a B-boy camera can. The B-boy character stood up with a spray can.
Mad. Oh, shit.
There they are. Yeah.
You have to take me a photo of that. What?
Yeah. So, I brought loads of them and gave them out to everybody, as you can see. Like, yeah. Mister's got some. But yeah, back to the Tag the System. So as well as the it was at this gallery. So it was upstairs in this gallery. There was a bar underneath.
Mm.
So they got the gallery upstairs. So I had one of them stupid Nokia.
Mm.
What they're called? 20. It was shitty Nokia. Mm. What even made to take pictures, but it took pictures. But you try to download any of them pictures now, and they're so pixelated when you try to blow them up, to just get distorted. That's how bad it is.
Wow. Yeah.
So, and scene came down to that as well. I met scene were down there, Cope 2 were down there, T-Kid were there, Blade were there.
You're just in amongst royalty. That is fucking...
Everybody were there who were... they had all their trains on display as well, so they're going to show up.
Yeah.
And then they had, like, an after-party as well underneath in a bar where there was a free bar, I thought...
Yeah. Have some of that.
I'll have some of that. So yeah, so that's the first time I met Cope 2 there. Cope 2 and T-Kid, there was talking in the corner, so like I had a few words with him. And then Crazy Legs were there. Well, the whole Tats crew were there, because I went down with them. But you know, when you've had a bit to drink and everything like that, you know, there's a cipher starts forming. And, you know, people start to breakdance. Crazy Legs is breakdancing or all that.
Of course, because he's there, you know.
I've had a few JDs at this time and I thought, well, I can take him.
Oh, my God. You had it. Shut up. Really? You jumped in? Oh, my God. You're like the first person I've heard to like challenge. Really?
Yeah. So I did like a little fusion, did a little like roulette. Flare roll and came up with a pose.
Looking amazing. Oh my God.
Yeah.
This is, you know, this is the thing with hip hop is anything can pop off at any time. That's the thing. And you've just got to have your skills ready. You've just got to have you just got to know your abilities and just be ready for it, isn't it?
Yeah, and you got like Howard Nozum shouting, "Yo, English, English," pointing like.
And you're just like, "Yo, I'm in. I don't care where I'm from right now. I'm in my element." But yeah, it's a bit of that Dutch courage, isn't it? You know.
Yeah. I wouldn't have got up there if I wouldn't have had a JD or two.
Eras, man.
But you know, it's like a one-off. You got to take it. Really.
You got to take an opportunity. 100%. Do you think enough people take those opportunities? Like, you know, if you see something, take it, innit? That's a real.
You only live once. Yeah. So if you're in a situation like that, take it.
Go get it.
Go for it.
Then you won't have any regrets.
And then you'll have some stories to tell, like I have.
That's right. That's right. Any regrets? Anything you regret?
I regret the rave scene.
Really?
And falling into that era.
Really, do you?
Yeah.
You're not the only one that says that, to be fair.
I regret that.
Yeah, why?
Because I would have carried on doing graph. I would have carried on doing graph. I would have, you know, doing that generation.
Yeah.
What wouldn't have got lost?
And I bet a lot of cold fucking writers have just disappeared.
Yeah, but in that rave scene,
in that rave scene,
I did start DJing.
Okay, so this is where this is coming. I couldn't read it. So yeah. Okay, so and you got into the DJing, drum and bass.
Yeah, well, first of all, it was I started off doing techno, and then I moved on to jungle. Or Ragga Rave. Not your Ragga Rave at first, and then into Jungle, and then...
What was your DJ name?
Same name what I've got, Such Des.
Nice.
I thought, why change it?
Yeah.
Everybody knows me as that.
Yeah.
So I'll just keep that name.
It's good. Fuck. Dude, like, then this is... But if this was a commodity and a thing, how come you didn't wish you hadn't done it?
Graffiti is my passion, really. I mean, when I was DJing, I mean, there were a lot of DJs out there. You know, there were a lot of DJs competing for, like, spots on decks and stuff like that. But my brother did it. My brother was doing DJ. That's how I got into it. DJ EZD, respect my brother. And that's how I got into doing DJing. And I did it for a while. Mm. I still do a bit now if a job came up or something like that, I'd do a bit now. But I'll still play that old school,
that era.
Yeah, that era from like mid early 90s.
That's just coming back though.
Well, you know, to find me if anybody wants to hire me.
I find it interesting. Yeah, with DJing, it's often. The more competition there is, and if you've got a passion for something, then you just drive it through it all, don't you? You cut through. But if you feel for a second like there's any sort of resistance in the wake of doing something, 9 times out of 10, a lot of that is perhaps a small percentage of you just not being as passionate about it.
Mm.
It's a hard one, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, like graffiti has always been in my heart, really. I mean, look at me now. I've been 30, probably. Let me try and work this out.
Mm-hmm.
It's about 35 years, 36 years I've been doing graph.
Mm. Amazing. Mate, 36 years, boy.
Yeah, that is a long time.
What's the future?
I'm still going to paint until my hand falls off, to be fair, or get arthritis or whatever, but I'm still going to... I'll just use that hand.
Yeah, exactly. Got two of everything around here, you know what I mean? Brother, thank you so much. I'm going to catch my train, but thank you so much. Thank you so much for passing through, my brother.
Thank you for coming up.
Yeah, man. Let's do more.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's do more.
Definitely. Enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Time flies when you're having fun, though.
Yeah, done my Yeah, he had it. He said it. Killer Keller podcast striking again. Big shout out, such Dej. Hold tight, my brother.
Respect.
Killer Keller Podcast, striking a vengeance, sharing is caring. You know what it is. Hold tight, all my Sheffield crew. We'll be back, all right? No sleep. Sharing is caring. Now that he was out of fashion. Peace.
Peace.
Gang-a-lang-a-ding-dong.